5. Grey London. The city looked positively bleak, shrouded in the dying light, as if everything had been painted over with only black and white, an entire palette dampened to shades of grey. Chimneys sent up plumes of smoke, and huddled forms hurried past, shoulders bent against the cold. And Kell had never been so happy to be there. To be invisible. Standing on the narrow road in the shadow of Westminster, he drew a deep breath, despite the hazy smoke and cold-filled air, and relished the feeling. A chill wind cut through, and he thrust his hands in his pockets and began to walk. He didn't know where he was going. It didn't matter. There was no place to hide in Red London, not anymore, but he could still carve out space for himself here. He passed a few people on the streets, but no one knew him. No one balked or cringed away. Sure, there had been rumors once, in certain circles, but to most passers-by he was just another stranger, a shadow, a ghost, in a city filled with...
"It's you!"
Kell tensed at the voice. He slowed, but didn't stop, assuming that the words weren't meant for him, or if they were, then said by mistake.
"Sir!"
The voice called again, and Kell glanced around, not for the source, but for anyone else it might be speaking to. But there was no one nearby, and the word was said with recognition, with knowing. His rising mood shuddered and died as he dragged himself to a stop and turned to find a lanky man clutching an armful of papers and staring directly at him, eyes as large as coins. A dark scarf hung around the man's shoulders, and his clothes weren't shabby, but they didn't fit him well. He looked like he'd been stretched out, his face and limbs too long for his suit. His wrists protruded from the cuffs, and on the back of one, Kell saw the tail edge of a tattoo. A power rune. The first time Kell had seen it, he remembered thinking two things. The first was that it was inaccurate, distorted the way a copy of a copy of a copy might be. The second was that it belonged to an enthusiast, a Greyworlder who fancied himself a magician. Kell hated enthusiasts.
"Edward Archibald Tuttle III," said Kell dryly.
The man, Ned, burst into an awkward grin as if Kell had just delivered the most spectacular news.
"You remember me?"
Kell did. He remembered everyone he did business, or chose not to do business with.
"I don't have your dirt," he said, recalling his half-sarcastic promise to bring the man a bag of earth if he waited for Kell.
Ned waved it away.
"You came back," he said, hurrying forward. "I was beginning to think you wouldn't, after everything, that is to say, after the horrible business with the pub's owner, dreadful business. I waited, you know, before it happened, and then after, of course, and still. And I was beginning to wonder, which isn't the same thing as doubting, mind you. I hadn't begun to doubt, but no one had seen you, not in months and months, and now, well, you're back."
Ned finally trailed off, breathless. Kell didn't know what to say. The man had done enough talking for both of them. A sharp wind cut through, and Ned nearly lost his papers.
"Bloody hell, it's cold," he said. "Let me get you a drink."
He nodded at something behind Kell when he said it, and Kell turned to see a tavern. His eyes widened as he realized where his treacherous feet had taken him. He should have known. The feeling was there, in the ground itself, the subtle pull that only belonged to a fixed point. The stone's throw. Kell was standing only a few strides from the place where he'd done business, the place where Lila had lived and Baron had died. He had been back once, when it was all over, but the doors were locked. He'd broken in, but Baron's body was already gone. He climbed the narrow stairs to Lila's room at the top, found nothing left but a dark stain on the floor and a map with no markings. He'd taken the map with him, the last trinket he'd ever smuggle. He hadn't been back since. Kell's chest ached at the sight of the place. It wasn't called the Stone's Throw anymore. It looked the same, felt the same, now that Kell was paying attention,
but the sign that hung above the door said, "The Five Points."
"I really shouldn't," he said, frowning at the name.
"The tavern doesn't open for another hour," insisted Ned, "and there's something I want to show you."
He pulled a key from his pocket, fumbling one of his scrolls in the process. Kel reached out and caught it, but his attention was on the key as Ned slid it into the lock.
"You own this place?" he said incredulously.
Ned nodded.
"Well, I mean, I didn't always, but I bought it up. After all that nasty business went down, there was talk of raising it, and it just didn't seem right. So when it came up for sale, well, I mean, you and I, we both know this place isn't just a tavern. That's to say, it's special. Got that aura of,"
he lowered his voice,
"magic,"
and then spoke up again,
"about it. And besides, I knew you'd come back. I just knew."
Ned went inside as he rambled, and Kel didn't have much choice but to follow. He could have walked away and left the man prattling, but Ned had waited, had bought the whole damn tavern so he could keep waiting. And there was something to be said for stubborn resolve, so he followed the man in. The place was impenetrably dark, and Ned set his scrolls on the nearest table and made his way, half by feel, to the hearth to stoke a fire.
"The hours are different here now," he said, piling a few logs into the grate, "because my family doesn't know, you see, that I've taken up the points. They just wouldn't understand. They'd say it wasn't a fitting profession for someone in my position, but they don't know me. Not really. Always been a bit of a stray cat, I suppose. But you don't care about that, sorry. I just wanted to explain why it was closed up. Different crowd nowadays, too."
Ned trailed off, struggling with a piece of flint, and Kel's gaze drifted from the half-charred logs in the hearth to the unlit lanterns, scattered on tabletops and hung from ceiling beams. He sighed, and then, either because he was feeling cold or indulgent, he snapped his fingers. The fire in the hearth burst to life, and Ned staggered back as it crackled with the bluish-white light of enchanted flames before settling into the yellows and reds of more ordinary fire. One by one, the lanterns began to glow as well, and Ned straightened and turned, taking in the spreading light of the self-igniting lamps as if Kel had summoned the stars themselves into his tavern. He made a sound, a sharp intake of breath, and his eyes went wide, not with fear or even surprise, but with adoration, with awe. There was something to the man's unguarded fascination, his unbridled delight at the display, that reminded Kel of the old king. His heart ached. He'd once taken the enthusiast's interest as hunger, greed, but perhaps he'd been mistaken. He was nothing like the new King George. No, Ned had the childlike intensity of someone who wanted the world to be stranger than it was, someone who thought they could believe magic into being. Ned reached out and rested his hand on one of the lanterns.
"It's warm," he whispered.
"Fire generally is," said Kel, surveying the place. With the infusion of light, he could see that while the outside had stayed the same, inside the Five Points was a different place entirely. Curtains had been draped from the ceiling in dark swathes, rising and falling above the tables, which were arranged like spokes on a wheel. Black patterns had been drawn, no, burned, into the wooden tabletops, and Kel guessed they were meant to be symbols of power, though some looked like Ned's tattoo, vaguely distorted, while others looked entirely made up. The stone's throw had always been a place of magic, but the Five Points looked like one, or at least like a child's idea of one. There was an air of mystery, of performance, and as Ned shrugged out of his overcoat, Kel saw that he was wearing a black high-collared shirt with glossy onyx buttons. A necklace at his throat bore a five-pointed star, and Kel wondered if that was where the tavern had gotten its name, until he saw the drawing framed on the wall. It was a schematic of the box Kel had had with him when he and Ned first met. The element game, with its five grooves. Fire, water, earth, air, bone. Kel frowned. The diagram was shockingly accurate.
down to the grain in the wood. He heard the sound of clinking glasses and saw Ned behind the counter, pulling bottles from the wall. He poured two draughts of something dark and held one out in offering. For a moment, Kel thought of Baron. The bartender had been as broad as Ned was narrow, as gruff as the youth was exuberant. But he'd been as much a part of this place as the wooden stone, and he was dead because of Holland, because of Kel.
"Master Kel?"
pressed Ned, still holding out the glass. He knew he should be going, but he found himself approaching the counter, willing the stool out a few inches before he sat down. "Show off," said a voice in his head, and maybe it was right. But the truth was, it had been so long since anyone had looked at him the way Ned did now. Kel took up the drink.
"What is it you want to show me, Ned?"
The man beamed at the use of the nickname.
"Well, you see," he said, drawing a box from beneath the bar, "I've been practicing."
He set the box on the counter, flicked open the lid, and drew out a small parcel from within. Kel had his glass halfway to his lips when he saw what Ned was holding and promptly set the drink down. It was an element set, just like the one Kel had traded here 4 months ago. No, it was the same exact element set, from the dark wood sides down to the little bronze clasp.
"Where did you get that?" he asked.
"Well, I bought it."
Ned set the magician's board reverently on the counter between them and slid the clasp, letting the board unfold to reveal the five elements in their grooves.
"From that gentleman you sold it to. Wasn't easy, but we came to an agreement."
Great, thought Kel, his mood suddenly cooling. The only thing worse than an ordinary enthusiast was a wealthy one.
"I tried to make my own," Ned continued, "but it wasn't the same. I've never been much good with that kind of thing. You should have seen the chicken scratch of that drawing before I hired—"
"Focus," said Kel, sensing that Ned could wander down mental paths all night.
"Right," he said. "So, what I wanted to show you," he cracked his knuckles dramatically, "was this."
Ned tapped the groove containing water and then brought his hands down flat on the counter. He squinted down at the board, and Kel relaxed as he realized where this was going. Nowhere. Still, something was different. The last time Ned had tried this, he'd gestured in the air and spoken some nonsense over the water, as if the words themselves had any power. This time his lips moved, but Kel couldn't hear what he was saying. His hands stayed flat, splayed out on the counter to either side of the board. For a moment, as predicted, nothing happened. And then, right as Kel was losing his patience, the water moved. Not much, but a bead seemed to rise slightly from the pool before falling back, sending tiny ripples through the water. Sanct. Ned stepped back, triumphant, and while he managed to keep his composure, it was clear he wanted to thrust his arms in the air and cheer.
"Did you see it? Did you see it?"
he chanted, and Kel had. It was hardly a dangerous capacity for magic, but it was far more than he had expected. It should have been impossible, for Ned, for any Grey Worlder, but the past few months made him wonder if anything was truly out of bounds. After all, Lila had come from Grey London, and she was... well, but then she was something else entirely.
"Magic has no place in your world," he'd told the king. "Not anymore. The world is full of cycles. Perhaps our time will come again."
What was happening? He'd always thought of magic as a fire, each London sitting farther and farther from its heat. Black London had burned up, so near it was to the flame. But Grey London had gone to coals long ago. Was there still somehow a spark? Something to be kindled? Had he accidentally blown on the dying flames? Or had Lila?
"That's all I've been able to manage," said Ned excitedly. "But with proper training..."
He looked at Kel expectantly as he said that, and then quickly down again.
"That is, with the right teacher, or at least some guidance."
"Ned," Kel started.
Of course, I know you must be busy, in demand, and time is precious.
Edward, he tried again.
But I have something for you,
pressed the man. Kell sighed. Why was everyone suddenly so keen to give him gifts?
I tried to think about what you said last time, about how you were only interested in things that mattered, and it took me some time, but I think I've found something worthy. I'll go get it.
Before Kell could tell him to stop, could explain that whatever it was, he couldn't take it, the man was out from behind the bar and hurrying into the hall, taking the steps upstairs two at a time. Kell watched him go, wishing he could stay. He missed the stone's throw, no matter its name, missed the simple solidity of this place, this city. Did he have to go home? And that was the problem right there. Red London was home. Kell didn't belong here in this world. He was a creature of magic, Arnesian, not English. And even if this world still had any power, for Tirin said no place was truly without it, Kell couldn't afford to stoke it, not for Ned, or the king, or himself. He'd already disrupted two worlds. He wouldn't be to blame for a third. He raked a hand through his hair and pushed up from the stool, the footsteps overhead growing fainter. The game board still sat open on the counter. Kell knew he should take it back, but then what? He'd just have to explain its presence to Staff and Hostra. No, let the foolish boy keep it. He set the empty glass down and turned to leave, shoving his hands in his pockets. His fingers brushed something in the very bottom of his coat. His hand closed over it, and he drew out a second Red London Lin. It was old, the gold star worn smooth by hands and time, and Kell didn't know how long it had languished in his pocket. It might have been one of the coins he'd taken from the old king, exchanged for one new and pocket-worn. Or it might have been a stray piece of change lost in the wool-lined pocket. He considered it for a moment, then heard the sound of a door shutting overhead and footsteps on the stairs. Kell set the coin on the counter by his empty glass and left.